Episode 4007, Grow Great, the podcast. Today it's about the good intentions of your inner critic. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentrow, your host here at Grow Great. You can find the show notes for today's episode at growgreat.com. Plug in the number 4007. That's 4007, as in James Bond. Plug that into the search box over at the website, and it will take you right there. You may notice, if you, speaking of critics, if you are critical of audio, as I am, you will notice a sonic difference in today's episode. No production music because, well, the studio is in fine shape, but we had thunderstorms that rolled through Dallas-Fort Worth today. And I've got a piece of equipment that all the rest of the equipment plugs into, a power conditioner. It did its job. It absolutely did its job. It saved all of the gear, but a spike in voltage knocked out the device. So I have everything unplugged, so you're listening to a rather pristine version of audio coming out of the Yellow Studio today. But hey, we're going to do it anyway. It's the good intentions of your inner critic. Sometimes, let me give you a disclaimer here. A disclaimer. Sometimes people need professional therapy. Our pain sometimes demands it. Our ability, maybe our lack of ability, our inability, or our capacity to process our pain, sometimes it just needs some shoring up. I am not a professional therapist. I'm just a business guy with a lifetime of striving toward higher self-awareness. A coach and a consultant. If you spend your lifetime studying people, including yourself, you learn a few things. Mostly, I have learned that there's just so much that I just don't know. There's so much I have not yet learned. Today's show is not intended to serve in place of a mental health professional. Some of the most successful people may find themselves in need of professional help because, well, success brings about its own level and degree of pain as well as pressure. So my best advice is take care of yourself and seek whatever help you need. Today's show is brought to you, as always, by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A Network, LLC. Bula Network is an executive coaching and consultancy serving CEOs, business owners, and executives, including city government leaders. You can find out more by going to the website growgreat.com. He was very small. I don't know, probably 4 years old or so. I don't remember the specific circumstance, but I do remember having countless conversations with him about this voice inside his head, and I would sometimes say, it's this little man, he's perched on your shoulder, and I wouldn't do it in a scary way, but this little man, and I would point to one shoulder, and he's kind of perched here on your shoulder, and he's whispering in your ear. I was probably 27 years old or so. The four-year-old, well, he was my son, our firstborn. And patience, as with most four-year-olds, was, it just was not in his arsenal yet. My task as his father, I think, and I thought then, and I still think so, was to help him discover it, to help him add it to his arsenal. Mostly, I was intent on helping him learn to develop resilience. So my wife and I, we quickly realized, didn't take us long, by the way, that if he didn't excel at something immediately, he got frustrated. He got angry. In fact, he would throw a temper tantrum. And his temper was mostly ignited at his own failure. He wasn't really prone to getting angry at other people. He mostly got angry at himself. And we knew from the outset that he was innately competitive. Ridiculously competitive. Now, I'm on one knee, and I'm bending down to look him in the face, and the topic is this invisible little man who lives in his head and who tells him really crazy things like, you'll never be able to do this, you're an idiot for even trying. I mean, come on, look at you. You can't even do it right the first time. And so I worked diligently to help him understand that, you know, we've all got this little person living in our head, this little person who's telling us these lies, but we also have another person who's perched on the other shoulder, whispering in the other ear, telling us the truth, giving us encouragement, telling us, yeah, sure, you can do it, and urging us to silence that other voice, that critic. My son was not at all getting professional help from me. I mean, I was and still am, when it comes to these kinds of things, a rank amateur, with enough self-awareness and communication skills to know that I did not want my little boy to grow up feeling defeated before he had even begun. It didn't matter if it was hitting a ball with a bat. It didn't matter if it was catching a ball. It didn't matter if it was riding a bike. It didn't matter if it was skating. It didn't matter what it was. Anything like that frustrated him if he couldn't master it immediately. It was just like learning. That's not acceptable. Learning, you kidding me? He was born with some wiring that compelled him with the need to be instantly good. And if you're not instantly good, well, then it's completely worthless. To my wife and I, it went beyond the scope of childish expectation. And through the years, we would learn that it was just kind of part of who he was. Our job was to equip him as best we could with the tenacity to understand it, to manage it, and to harness it for his own good. Today, he's 35, and we couldn't be prouder. Thankfully, we didn't screw him up too badly. And now it's his turn. Now it's his turn to avoid screwing up his own kids, our grandkids. The other day, I was remembering some of those down-on-one-knee talks that I'd had with him through the years, and many of them I had where I didn't have to get down on one knee, and wondering where I got my stories about the little man living in your head telling you all these negative things. If I learned about it formally, and by that I mean a book or someone teaching it to me, I don't remember. I just don't remember. What I do remember is always knowing that I had such a little man living in my head. He's been there for as long as I can remember. He's at least as old as I am. And it's likely where I got my first fondness for what was once called self-help books. I'd read books. I'd listen to audio tapes. I would consume quite a lot of that material, especially in my 20s. It was interesting to me. I was mostly interested in the deeper stuff that had some scientific basis. I wasn't so smitten with all the rah-rah, sis-boom-bah kind of stuff and those kind of authors. I've read some of that stuff, but that was never the really appealing stuff to me. You know, that was the stuff that jumped to the bestseller list, and mostly, I would find them trite. I'd find them cheesy. I wanted substance. And really, what I wanted was understanding. In college psychology classes, they were fascinating. My library still contains a variety of books aimed at helping us understand ourselves and why we do what we do, or why we fail to do other things that we know we should do. I wasn't smart enough. I was not smart enough to pursue science, but I was highly interested. And so as a business guy, even as a hi-fi salesman during college, studying people was always, it was really always the underlying reason for it, I guess. Finding out what people wanted, finding out why they wanted that, listening to them tell their stories, watching their faces as they talked about their favorite record, their favorite band. It was all pretty interesting stuff. And I suppose in some small way, I figured that if I could develop skills to better understand people, then maybe I could better understand myself. And I don't know, maybe that was the point all along. Understand yourself better. Now, doesn't everybody have an inner critic? I mean, I'm supposing so. I can't imagine somebody not having at least one, maybe more than one, inner critic. And I've already admitted that I've long had this personal fascination with my own inner critic and with my children's inner critic and self-esteem. My kids were born in the early 80s. Well, my son was born in 80, my daughter born in 81, and they very well may be the last kids, their generation, to be raised by old school parents like us. You know, old school parents who didn't subscribe to participation trophies and didn't get too wrapped up in, oh, well, we want little Johnny and little Jane to be, you know, think highly of themselves. We did. We wanted them to feel good about themselves, but we wanted it to be something a lot deeper than this whole notion of everybody wins. We wanted our son and our daughter to be independent. We wanted them to stand up for what they believed in. We wanted them to do the right thing, no matter what. And we really wanted them to figure out what occupation would best serve them and their future families. Both my kids were and still are experience-driven, much more so than my baby boomer generation ever was. We were materialistic. Yes, we were. We chased financial success. Our parents were part of what Tom Brokaw calls that greatest generation, you know, that World War II veteran kind of group. Our folks worked hard, and we learned our work ethic from them. But there's a little doubt. We gave up a lot in the process. We worked a lot of hours. We would grind away to climb the ladder and find success, which was mostly based on how much money we made. And thankfully, our children found a better way. I think our children found a more balanced life. Understanding ourselves often, if not always, takes us back to our childhood, because we're all a product of our upbringing. My wife and I, we knew full well as we were raising these two kids, a son and a daughter, we knew that we were packing their bags, and we knew we were packing bags that they would carry with them the rest of their lives, and that's just how it goes. I was committed to making some of those bags that I gave my kids just as profitable and as productive as I knew how. And time is going to have to judge whether or not I was able to do that as well as I had hoped. So far, so good. So far, so good. But you'd have to talk to them. They would have to tell you how colossally I failed or succeeded. It all boiled down to helping them better understand themselves. And of course, first I had to better understand myself. And that was always the hard part. And today that's the hard part for them, now that I see them parenting, trying to pass on whatever lessons they learned. It's kind of funny. And it's way cool. It's way cool when you see your children have children. And you see what's being passed on. Yeah, it's cool. So I keep reading, I keep observing, I keep writing, I keep doing my best to pay attention. And of course, as always, trying to connect the dots, trying to make sense of it all. I've posted, my favorite cartoon is Ballard Street, and I have posted over at the website. Just go to gogreat.com. Again, plug in the number 4007, plug that into the search box and you'll see it. It's a picture of a man. He's got his spectacles on, he's got his hat on, and he's staring at this sign of this shop window. And the sign says "Makes No Sense Incorporated." Makes No Sense Incorporated. And the caption to the cartoon simply says, "Nevertheless, Nelson tries." I'm Nelson. Man alive, am I ever Nelson? Makes no sense, and nevertheless, here's Nelson staring at this sign, trying to make sense of it all. Yeah, that's what I do. I'm a dot connector. I'm trying to make sense of it all. And I realize sometimes the dots don't even exist, and sometimes what looks like a dot, it ain't a dot. And sometimes things just don't make sense. It's a nice, quiet, well, at the moment, it's quiet, plush office. The CEO, he owns the joint. He started the company 27 years ago. He slogged his way to profitability. And over time, things began to take off. Somewhere around year 7, he started getting some newfound and very much needed traction. Business was good, but boy, now was the growth stressful. He was discovering brand new problems that he had never faced before. There were people problems. Capital just always seemed short. There were inventory issues. There were systems being taxed at every point, and he was scared to death. The growth had revealed all the things that he really knew were true. He wasn't prepared. He was not ready for this. And so he did what most of us do. He dove in trying to figure it out as he went. Desperation, that's how he characterizes those years. He desperate to figure out what he needed to do, desperate to connect the dots and make sense of it all. And so he did all he knew to do, and that was just take action. Mostly he admits he got it wrong. But if he did get it wrong, as he did quite often, he just would try to fix it as quickly as he could. When he got it right, man, when he got it right, thankfully it paid off handsomely. So he just assumed, you know, if he could win more than he lost, then okay, everything will work out in the end. Well, that's all great and wonderful. The problem is that didn't help him sleep at night, and it sure didn't help him build an organization. It didn't help him develop a high-performing team. It didn't help him implement better systems. I mean, no sooner had the euphoria of getting traction hit until that gave way to extremely high anxiety. Fact was, he had never been this afraid. He had employees, he had payroll, he had suppliers, he had financial concerns. He was eating, drinking, staying awake at night, fretting about the business. And here we sit. Here we sit a couple of decades later. It's in the middle of the afternoon. He's troubled. And today he is lamenting a few opportunities that he has had to develop a key right-hand person. I mean, there was the young man that he hired 22 years ago. That was before the traction took hold. A diligent young man, he describes. High degree of willingness, a little rough around the edges sometimes, but plenty of horsepower to work with. He never had the time, and it frankly admits he never took the time to really mentor this young man. And eventually the young man left. He told the guy he needed a new opportunity. Yeah, but this owner, he figured he really meant that he wasn't growing like he wanted, and he figures they both likely understood the fact of it all. Just wasn't meant to be kind of a thing. After that, he figures there had to be at least, in his mind, two more. Well, he's got a strong team today, but he can't seem to get past the lost opportunities to have grown talent that would likely be serving him now in his latter years. Talent that might best help him achieve what he most wants now, right now, today, some 20 years later. And there's a regret, man. There's a regret on his face as he's telling me the story. And I ask him about himself, right? I mean, he's been telling me about these past employees, but he's not saying a lot about himself. What's the issue for you, I ask? Me? It's my business. It's all an issue for me. Spoken like a true business owner, right? Well, spoken like every business owner I've ever encountered. And I know how he means it. I know exactly how he means it. But I also know that, you know, that kind of verbiage can really camouflage what's really bothering me. I mean, it's all my business. It's all an issue for me. And so I ask him to help me understand. Help me understand how you're feeling. Help me understand what you're thinking. Well, it's pretty clear. His mood grows. It grows increasingly reflective. He gets pensive. He takes off his glasses. He rubs his eyes. And he says very softly, "I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do this anymore." Well, now that's just a bolt out of the blue. I mean, for me, a guy who's almost always on guard, I'm caught off guard. I mean, I'm pretty prepared for most things that people tell me. But yeah, this one's a bolt out of the blue. I ask him, we'll talk more about that. And for the next 20, 30 minutes or so, he laments his life organizationally, professionally, personally. He's trapped by his success. He is trapped by his business. He is trapped by having to do it all. He is trapped by making every big decision. I mean, here he is. He's the CEO of a mid-sized company with millions and millions of dollars of revenue, just under 100 employees, and a staff of about 7 direct reports. He is surrounded by people. Surrounded by people. And he speaks fondly about most of them. But he continues to lament that he's never fully developed a person capable of replacing him. Somebody who can help him ease into a new role that he just longs to achieve. Because what he wants to be a wise mentor capable of giving historical context, industry know-how. I mean, all these other insights that have taken him a lifetime to accomplish, to serve a leadership team capable of going higher, always higher. It's pretty interesting. What are you most afraid of? I ask. Because I know it's time where I can ask that now and likely get an honest answer. And you got to be careful when you ask that. He looks at me, puts his glasses back on, papers all over his desk. He looks at some papers on his desk. I mean, just glances at them. And then he looks up and he peers at me with his eyes slightly squinted. You know, the kind of squint that you have when you've just got a slight headache. It's that kind of a squint. What are you most afraid of? Being alone. Being alone, he says. Yeah, but that ship sailed. I am alone. Well, that's just kind of sad. I don't say that, but I'm thinking it. His marriage ended shortly after his year of traction. That's been 20 years ago. One daughter. She's off at college somewhere up north, completing a graduate degree. He's confessed that his wife and mistress, they are one and the same. Yeah, his business. Oh, he's got a lot of friends. A lot of friends. Well, he's got people with whom he can socialize. Calendar, full, packed, all the time. All the time. Lots of activities. At work, at home, he is surrounded by people. And yet here he sits with me, admitting he is mostly alone. All the trappings of success, they are just that, trappings. He says so. I mean, this is just no longer working for him. He is a miserable man. Successful, by all accounts, and miserable. Part of providing the opportunity to shell it down and be transparent is giving leaders the release that they have longed to have. He seems to be breathing. Well, he is breathing. He's alive. But I mean, he seems to really be catching his breath, you know? I mean, not just physically, but emotionally. And I remind him as I started this show that I'm not a therapist. And my work is not therapy. But I remind him, as I have so many other times, it is therapeutic. Yeah, boy, don't I know it, he said. Now, he's in his 60s. He's not the four-year-old little boy that I was talking to when I was 27, but I'm no longer 27. But there's still this little person inside him telling him things. He is surrounded by talent. He is surrounded by expertise in his business. He is experienced. He's got know-how. He's got solid business acumen. He's mostly, though, listening to some unnamed little person living in his head. And this trusted advisor has no name, has no credentials, and only has one mission, seemingly, to nag him into misery. Well, I don't know that that's the mission, but that seems to be the impact. And over time, it's clear to him that he is refusing to get too close to people. Part of him wants to, but he's afraid. He's afraid it won't work out, like his marriage. He's afraid he might get hurt. Or he's afraid that, like those early employees who abandoned him, that'll happen again. And that's his word. That's his word, abandoned. I mean, he uses some pretty harsh language in talking about these people who've left him as though they have betrayed him. I mean, no matter that they were willing, no matter that they were hardworking, no matter that they were devoted, no matter that they likely weren't feeling very valued by him, he sees it the way he sees it. Clear or not. I mean, it's his perspective. So talk turns to our inner critic. I find myself reverting back to the 27-year-old version of me that first talked to a little 4-year-old boy about this voice in your head. A voice that sometimes, well, maybe all the time, wants to serve us, but sometimes it has the opposite effect. Well, he concludes that his inner critic is likely trying to protect him from being hurt. The problem is those good intentions just aren't working. No. Instead, they're causing him to repel against the very things he needs to do to get out from under this life that he no longer wants. And I remind him, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you with your business and your professional life. And hey, if it can carry over into your personal life, that's great and that's wonderful. I care about you. I want you to succeed. I want you to have what you want. I care about his entire life, but I urge him to consider finding a professional that might be able to serve you in some ways that I just can't. I'm not qualified. Well, he does that. He finds a professional, and after just one session, he kept going, but just after one session, he tells me, man, what a gift it is. What a gift it is to have two people serving him like this. Me and a mental health professional, a therapist. Well, I'm humbled. I figure I'm in good company. That's cool. Age doesn't matter. Intentions don't either. Whether we're old, whether we're young, our inner critic likely never goes away. I have concluded that maybe the best we can do is to understand it. Well, that's not true. The best we can do is probably to manage it, but it certainly is a move in the right direction to understand it. I've learned that oftentimes my own inner critic is seeking my best, or thinks he is. And so I hear things like, don't try that. That won't work. You're only going to embarrass yourself. Good little voice, right? Trying to protect me from embarrassment. There's a book written by a guy named Jay Early and Bonnie Weiss. It's called Freedom from Your Inner Critic. Now, I've read a lot of different kinds of things like this. I'm mentioning this one because it's not frou-frou. It's not fluff. It's these are some seriously educated, credentialed people. I'm certainly not in a position to hold it up as the bastion of everything that is accurate when it comes to these kinds of things. It's just one book among many. Freedom from Your Inner Critic by Jay Early and Bonnie Wise. Part of what the authors point out is that our inner critic has these old ideas about us. And so we listen to these antiquated images of who we may have been at one time. Our inner critic is pushing us to remember an outdated version of ourselves. Right? I mean, that's what's happening with this man. He's remembering the pain of a marriage. He's remembering 20 years ago, actually more, when he lost an employee that he now wishes he would have invested in more. This is the inner critic. The problem is this inner critic now, it's not fitting our current circumstance. It's not fitting our current skills. It's not fitting our current experience. And according to the authors, our inner critic then goes to work to protect us. Here's the problem. That protection causes us to doubt ourselves. And that makes us feel insufficient. And that can compel us to just get more miserable. This is where our CEO business owner is at. Yeah, I'm going to encourage you to read. I'm going to encourage you to study about this more, this whole inner critic kind of a thing. But let me share with you three things that Ms. Weiss points out as ways to tame this inner critic. Because these are interesting, and I hope this will help you in your professional endeavors and perhaps translate over into your personal endeavors as well. These are ways to train your inner critic, according to Ms. Weiss. Step one, separate. That little person living in our head is just one of many. It's one voice among many. The inner critic is not entirely you. It's just a part of you. And Ms. Weiss says that that voice, it has its own motives. And all the other voices that tell you you can't do something or that you shouldn't do something or that you're crazy for trying this, they all have their own motives and they all have their own worldview. The way to tame it, according to her, is to distance from it, to make a conscious decision to listen or not to listen. Now, sometimes if you're like me, you feel like, well, I don't have a choice but to listen. I mean, it's so stinking loud. Yeah, you got a choice. So make up your mind that you're going to either choose to listen or not to listen. Sometimes she says you need to tell that voice to back off. Right, you just need to step up and get in the voice's face and say, not now. And she argues that we all need to find and get in touch with our higher self, and that self is capitalized. I'm going to tell you to Google this because I had to do a little bit of homework. Google IFS. IFS stands for Internal Family Systems Therapy. Google that and read about it, and you'll find out more. I'm not qualified to talk about it, but this all kind of falls in that genre. This is where Mr. Early and Ms. Weiss, they fall in this camp. You can find out more. Google IFS, Internal Family Systems Therapy. I'm not saying this is the end-all, be-all. I am saying that I have found elements of this helpful in better understanding myself and in helping other people better understand themselves in the professional dynamics at work. So take it for what it's worth. Now, she goes on to say that like any voice or any advice we get, we can choose to listen or not listen to this inner critic. Yes, it's hard, but it's possible. Now, some people, they might be able to figure this out with just a little bit of reading, a little bit of study. Other people, they might require or they might want more structured help. It's just like any other endeavor, right? Some people, they're able to get a book, they're able to watch some YouTube videos, and they're able to teach themselves. Other people, we need a class. Still other people, we need a private tutor. This work is no different. Now, it's way more significant, in my opinion. It's way more beneficial and meaningful. It's all this head trash, right? It's head trash stuff. And sometimes head trash is really hard to get rid of. Sometimes we need a professional cleaner. We need therapy. Nothing wrong with that. So that's step number one, is separate. You need to put some distance between you and this inner critic. Step number two is update. She encourages us to ask our inner critic an important question, and here it is. And this one hit me. How old do you think I am? How old do you think I am? Now, I'm not asking you, how old do you think I am? I'm 58. But ask your little voice. Ask this inner critic, how old do you think I am? Most often, she says, we're going to hear back that our inner critic thinks that we're still a small child. I mean, it's as though our inner critic is just stuck in time, stuck in this time warp that it can't get out of. All the effort extended to protect us by a small yet loud voice is aimed quite often at protecting a child, not a grown adult with the skills and experience that we now possess. Look at our CEO. Look at our CEO. While in the moment he's not necessarily going back to childhood, he's going back two decades. He's lamenting things from two decades ago. He's trying to be protected from things that happened to him 20 years before that, in all honesty, don't have a whole lot of application right here, right now. The more you're able to show this part of yourself, this inner critic, who and what you really are today, right now, the more likely you're going to be able to update, according to Ms. Weiss, this inner critic into letting go of these dated concerns that this little voice is expressing to you. Because it is trying to protect you. The intentions are honorable. It just doesn't always serve you well. Step number three, mentor. Weiss and Early in the book, they use a term that I'm rather fond of, inner champion. And they capitalize both words, inner champion. That can be your new mentor. You need help in dealing with your inner critic. And they also capitalize that too. I don't. I'm not going to give it the satisfaction. Weiss finds it helpful to give your inner champion some human qualities. Well, you know, I've always done this. I've just intuitively done this. I remember telling my son, you know, this little man. Well, why is it a man? I mean, why has it got human qualities? I don't know. I gave it human qualities. She admits that her own inner champion is part Katharine Hepburn, Margaret Mead, and then some other people that she thought a lot of, thinks a lot of. Now, I didn't do this. See, this was telling to me as I was reading some of this book. I gave the inner critic some human qualities, but I mentioned this other voice. I just didn't. I don't know why I did. I ascribed speaking to this other voice, this voice that could encourage you and tell y'all. I didn't think of that voice being an inner champion, though, and I didn't think of giving it some kind of human qualities. But the job of this inner champion is to be your mentor. The job of this inner champion is to give you strength, inner resolve. And the inner champion often sounds like the voice, according to Ms. Weiss, it sounds like the voice of a good mom reminding you of your value and your capacity. This is a voice that's encouraging you to take reasonable risks so you can get what you want. Isn't it true? I mean, I talked about this in the last episode about getting out from under failure. Isn't it true that most of us, the thing that stands between us and our success is fear? And it is mostly, in my opinion, it is mostly compelled by this inner critic that is telling us, you're an idiot. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't even try it. It won't work. You'll just make an idiot of yourself. All you'll do is be disappointed. And then we're disappointed because we don't have the results we want. Our CEO has a life that he doesn't want. He's not a stupid man. He's a bright, accomplished guy. But he's afraid. The inner champion also has the courage to take a stand against your inner critic. And for me, this was a big, big thing. I mean, when I came to kind of wrestle with this some years ago, and I still wrestle with it, to understand that these two voices in your head, that they're kind of duking it out, and you get to pick which one wins. That's the cool thing, right? I mean, here we are, as I hit the record button, it's the latter part of January. We've got four teams left in the NFL playoffs. The Super Bowl is a month or so away, and we don't know who's going to win. That's why we play the game. But when it comes to this competition that's going on in our head, this competition going on in our heart, this competition going on in our life, it's a competition, and we get to pick who wins. Is it going to be the inner champion? Is it going to be the inner critic? It's up to you. It's completely up to you. The value of the inner champion is in helping us develop a process or a system for us to achieve what we want. When you lack a process, it's your inner champion that helps propel you forward to devise a plan. And the inner champion takes care of the fragile parts of you that aren't being protected by that inner critic. I mean, see, the inner critic is really intending to help you. The inner critic is really trying to serve you. It just doesn't always work out that way. Let's end by a brief discussion about clarity. Clarity. I'm a big fan. I mean, seeing things clearly doesn't mean that the news is always good or that the outcome is the outcome we wanted. It just means that we're seeing it for what it really is. And that provides us with an opportunity to make adjustments. That gives us a chance to fix what ails us and to figure out, okay, now what are we going to do? And that's what life is, right? Life is about adjustments. It's about learning. The CEO, he was learning some things for the first time in his life. He was putting in the work to avoid going it alone, thinking that he had to be strong enough all by himself, trapped by success, surrounded by people. He was already alone, and that's what he most feared. The very thing he was most afraid of, or at least he admitted, is the very thing. Good job. You've accomplished it. And when he saw it more clearly, he was able to devise a plan that he could own. Yes, professional therapy helped. Yes, I helped. He got some strategy in place, which drove his hopes higher. And in time, he got some optimism because he could see a positive outcome. Hopelessness gave way to optimism. Isn't that what we all want? Of course it is. So I encourage you to seek clarity for yourself. Leaders can get so busy and allow our lives to become so hectic. Well, frankly, we can allow our lives to become more hectic than is profitable. The steady refrain that I hear from every leader is, I'm too busy. I'm too busy. And so I'm a guy, I'll ask this. Do you think Benjamin Franklin he had any brilliance at all? How about Ernest Hemingway? And of course everybody says, well, yeah, of course. I mean, Ben Franklin, yeah, he was brilliant. Hemingway, yeah, him too. Well, Ben Franklin is quoted as having said or written, never confuse motion with action. Hemingway is quoted as having said, never mistake motion with action. Okay, pick your brilliant guy. Their quotes are the same. And they were both right. You may be too busy. My question is, what are you busy with? I mean, you can be busy listening to your inner critic. You can be busy running away. You can be busy hiding, but they're not profitable. Today, right now, do something for yourself. Face that inner critic. Don't tell me you don't have one. You do. Everybody's got one. In fact, according to Early and Weiss, we have probably plenty of them. We don't just have one. Read a book or four books on it. Confront it. seek professional help if you need it. Seek professional help if you want it. There are some of us out here who are ready to serve you and help you do some of the heavy lifting. No, it's your life. You got to do it. But there are plenty of us out here who are devoted to helping leaders face these kinds of things, effectively deal with these kinds of things. Hey, my name is Randy Cantrell, and I'm glad that you clicked play. I hope you will subscribe to the podcast, tell others about it. You can find out more about me and what I do and find all of the podcast episodes over at growgreat.com. I'll warn you, Grow Great takes you to my company website, BulaNetwork.com. But hey, Grow Great's easier to remember, right? And besides, you don't know what Bula means. You can go find out, though. Go to the website, click on the About page, and it'll tell you what Bula, B-U-L-A, means. Hey, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, I greatly appreciate you. Anything I can do to help, I'd love to. And I'll bid you farewell without any music. Hopefully next time I'll have the studio back in good shape. And I wish you well and greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.